This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Today we're listening to a pre-recorded conversation that's part of TPR series Great SA. This is a look at San Antonio's success in saving its history from the wrecking ball, and that's largely due to the efforts of the Conservation Society. So here's tonight's panel. We're joined by Kathy Rhodes, the president of the San Antonio Conservation Society. Kathy, it's great to have you. We're joined by Vincent L. Michael. He is the executive director of the San Antonio Conservation Society. Shanna Shea Miller is the City of San Antonio's Historic Preservation Officer. And Louis F. Fisher, he is a San Antonio author, historian, publisher. Among the books he's written includes Saving San Antonio, Preservation of a Heritage, The American Venice, An Epic Story of San Antonio's River, Chili Queens, Hay Wagons and Fandangos, The Spanish Plazas in Frontier San Antonio. Louis, it's good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
We're going to be talking about Conservation Society. My mom was in the Conservation Society. She was a president of the Conservation Society for a time. I would go and set up the booths at NIOSA and shuck corn and do all those things to make NIOSA go. But it's been amazing to me how it has been a force in San Antonio all of these years, using community activism, communications, persuasion, working behind the scenes to do what? Kathy Rhodes, tell me about what is the philosophy behind the Conservation Society?
Well, of course, it's to preserve our heritage and our culture. I come from a city, Houston, which did totally the opposite. So we're here not only to do that. We have NIOSA. We're famous for NIOSA. But we also do things like heritage education tours, building grants, all sorts of things to save. I mean, just look at downtown San Antonio compared with other cities. We have truly saved our important buildings. And along with that, we've attracted a visitor market as well. So we continue. Somebody said to us not too long ago that, what do you do now after you've saved all the important buildings? Well, guess what? New things pop up almost every week. So we're constantly involved, constantly active, of all volunteer member group, and we look forward to working on new things like Southwest Craft and some of those things that have just popped up out of the blue. So,
right, and so Vince Michael, as the executive director, so you came to San Antonio. You've been doing historic preservation in other parts of the country.
Yep.
And you heard that they need an executive director at the Conservation Society. This is one of the oldest conservation preservation organizations in the country. What was the track record that you wanted to be part of?
Well, it's partly that it is one of the oldest and has been working to save the architecture, nature, and culture of San Antonio for almost 100 years. Also, credit to Shannon. She brought me here in 2014 to do a talk, and I said, this is fabulous. But even if you look nationally, the National Trust, you ask them where are the cutting edges of historic preservation, they'll tell you San Antonio and San Francisco.
And so, Shannon, with the City of San Antonio, Historic Preservation Officer, some people would see the Conservation Society as a sort of adversarial role with the city, because the city has ideas. They want to knock down buildings and put up new things. Maybe not always see eye to eye with the Conservation Society. How do you work with an organization that you may not always be in alignment with?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think that happens very infrequently when it comes down to it. I mean, we are together on 99% of things because, I think Kathy talked about like being able to look around downtown and other places and seeing the success over the years of saving the buildings. And it certainly comes from the advocacy, but it also comes from having a strong preservation ordinance, and that's administered by the city. And so ultimately we have to be strong partners, both with the Conservation Society and the city, but then also with the people who are doing the development. You know, like preservation is a form of development. And so it's so much about kind of brokering the right deals and really working to find compromise where it's possible. But I think to your point and your question, one of the reasons why the Conservation Society has been so successful is that they are willing, when necessary, to stand up against the elected officials and file a lawsuit or do something like that the city may not always appreciate at the time. but what they feel is in the best interest of the community.
Louis Fisher, as a historian documenting San Antonio's history, preserving buildings, you know, buildings are great, but I wonder, is that really the purpose, saving the buildings? Or are we saving the stories? Or what? We want to know where we came from.
Saving the stories, you're saving the uniqueness of the city. You're saving what makes San Antonio distinct from other cities in the country that have torn everything down and that look like every place else. You say San Antonio and meet somebody from out of town, and right away what comes up are two of the great areas the Conservation Society has worked on. One, of course, the Alamo, and then the Riverwalk, and then things sort of cascade from there.
And the missions. Let's talk about that really quick. Yeah. So Kathy Rhodes Conservation Society. Had there not been a Conservation Society, we wouldn't have that World Heritage Site.
No, we wouldn't. And it started with buying the granary at San Jose and working up from there. And then actually one of our former presidents, Virginia Nicholas, had the idea to start the World Heritage process.
But also forming partnerships, alliances,
always
working with the Catholic Church to do the preservation, helping broker a deal so that there could be where the missions are, which
yes,
are working parishes and making those state parks and then national parks. I mean, it was a process.
It was a long process, and Los Compadres was formed to help with that process. It's Mission Heritage Partners now, but at the time it was Los Compadres. And Susan Chando and a few other people, Paul Ringenbach, wrote the actual grant that went to get that status, and we're the only one in Texas, so.
And what's really scary about the missions is that the Conservation Society was formed in the 1920s and very quickly began working on the saving the missions at the very time that development was creeping out. And if the Conservation Society had been organized 10 or 15 years later, it's quite probable that all of the, certainly San Jose and even Concepcion would have been overrun by development.
And Vincent, I'm thinking about the Woolworths Building, which is downtown across from Alamo, on Alamo Plaza. And we're seeing the state of Texas, they want to do something magnificent with in front of the Alamo. And there was a point of conflict there about what to do with the Woolworths Building. And I think that gets to the heart of really what I want to talk about tonight, which is about whose history gets preserved. And so there may be people who want to argue that people want to see the Alamo because that's where the battle was. But there were more than one battle was fought there, and there was one for civil rights as well. Can you talk about why we should be paying attention to the Woolworths Building and what happened?
Well, I mean, it's 6 years now since the state purchased the Crockett, Palace, and Woolworth buildings. And we immediately started. We got it listed on the Texas Most Endangered list, the Woolworth, right away, because we knew about that important civil rights history, the first voluntary and peaceful desegregation of lunch counters in the South during the 1960 sit-in movement. And it was important to us in 2018, after it seemed like the state was going to go ahead and demolish the Woolworth for a new museum, our position had always been, we want the museum. Do it in the building. And we finally got there after 6 years. And so we really said, let's create as broad-based a coalition as we can. Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, the San Antonio branch NAACP, SAGE on the east side, San Antonio African American Community Archive and Museum, West Side Preservation, and eventually the Mexican Civil Rights Institute, Mexican American Civil Rights Institute. So that coalition really made a difference because, you know, when you're dealing with public entities, you need to show that the community is really united behind an idea. And the idea was not the opposite of what they wanted to do. It was just another way of doing it.
But sometimes ears aren't always open to these other approaches. So, Shannon Miller, at this city hall, how was this discussion being ferried?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of the conversations that happened related to the buildings and the plan for the museum were happening at the state level and the that Alamo committee, you know, the committee level. But I think, you know, a lot of people at City Hall understood and still understand that that it is, you know, part of the desire within Alamo Plaza is to tell that whole story. And part of that story is that the mission happened and a city actually grew up around it. And those later buildings are part of that story that, you know, the mission kind of did what it set out to do in a way. And so I think, you know, it's important to kind of show that those layers of history.
And Louis Fisher, you've been writing history for a while. It's hard to communicate to some people that there were conflicts over lunch counters, and that was a fracture point in our society. Does it help to have the space preserved to say, this is where this happened, and we're going to tell this story now? We're not just going to sweep it aside because Phil Collins has got a collection of interesting things that we believe may have been part of the Alamo.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. It's very important to have the original site preserved and in place, and even bearing some resemblance to what it looked like then, because once you have a series of these landmarks, not necessarily the Woolworth Building on Alamo Plaza, but some of those buildings down along Houston Street that are very historic too, it gives you a sense, it documents the passage of time. And it gives you a sense of just the sweep of history and events that have taken place where you are, and it helps put just a whole lot of things in perspective.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, a pre-recorded conversation about the San Antonio Conservation Society. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The San Antonio Conservation Society fights to save local history, but how do they manage to do that? Listen in to our pre-recorded conversation. Right now in our society, I believe we're having a crisis of trust with institutions. There's a crisis of trust with government, with the media. You know, that's why we're seeing people who won't take a safe and effective vaccine, and we're having all sorts of fraying. But it seems to be a lot of trust with the Conservation Society, even today. How has that developed and maintained, Kathy?
I think it's the hard work of the volunteers and the advocacy that we've taken over the years. You don't find many groups that have that much of a volunteer effort. And to put together the coalitions, the neighborhood associations, we work with them. They're very important in saving some of our housing structures that we have. It's just an atmosphere of hard work and dedication and advocacy.
But a lot of people think of the Conservation Society as an old, stodgy organization, maybe occupied with a lot of Anglo women who may not be thinking about what it was like to grow up on the West Side. How are you able to explain to them that this is important to you?
The same way that we did with the Woolworth Building, we certainly have members. We even have male members. But we have almost every ethnic group represented. And that's part of the coalition and part of the involvement of the community. I've really not seen it too much across the country that something that strong with that volunteers that lasted that long and saved so much.
And Vincent, the Conservation Society, well, a lot of people talk about all the history, but isn't part of the mindset is thinking 50 years, 100 years into the future? Can you say, we want to save, okay, there was like this little tap dance studio that was across the street from Woodlawn Lake, mm-hmm. and that got knocked down. And you're saying, people are saying, well, that's nothing special. But you say, well, look, think about it 50 years from now. That's going to be a unique structure, and that's a loss that didn't get preserved. So how does the Conservation Society explain to me the process of thinking 50, 100 years into the future?
Well, I think, and that's a good question, because preservation is a future-oriented decision. And I think it's part of, like, what elements of the past does the community want in its future to remind them of the stories, to give them a sense of the space. I think the amazing thing about preserving physical things, and this includes nature like Breckenridge Park, which we helped create the conservancy for a dozen years ago, you don't get the same thing out of a book. You don't get the same thing out of a plaque. You have to see the thing. So we've just had this debate right across the creek about the St. James AME Church Foundation.
Right, the San Pedro Creek.
And they found these 1875, one of the first African-American religious congregations after
emancipation.
And there's been a very dedicated dialogue on how do you save the physical thing so people can see the physical thing. It was very important for everyone that it not be a plaque like the Rincon School over near the Southwest School of Art, that there be something that people can associate with. So I think that's the 50-year perspective. You want to say that there's a physical thing that will automatically remind you of an important story.
And in this day and age where misinformation reigns supreme, if you can take someone to a location and show them these are the foundations, this was a church structure that was built by emancipated people who had been enslaved, and they were taking agency over their lives, they formed a community, this was important to them, and so it's important to us.
Yeah, and so people were very focused, and a lot of our same partners, the African American Community Archive and Museum, were involved saying, you know, we want to be able to walk the space, we want to get a sense of the size of it, to be able to see the cornerstone, which has inscriptions on it. So those things are important.
And Shannon Miller, with the City of San Antonio, City Hall, we see all the changes going on around here downtown all the time. It used to be maybe historic preservation in San Antonio wasn't as hard as Houston because the economic pace was a lot slower.
Yes.
But the economic pace has picked up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot more challenges to saying, okay, we're going to preserve this, especially when someone wants to build a dynamic university right where that thing is. So how you do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. There is a lot of pressure. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is to preserve not just the, you know, like our historic, like, built heritage, but it's cultural sustainability and environmental sustainability at the same time. And so it's telling the stories, it's perpetuating traditions. You know, we've focused a lot the last few years on the living heritage, so traditional craft or ways of cooking or, you know, different things like that are important to the community. And I think another big priority is trades education. One of the challenges that people have on a day-to-day basis maintaining their historic properties is a lot of times just not being able to hire somebody that they can afford to work on it. And so the more that we can provide those resources, it makes saving those buildings more viable in the face of development pressure.
So you mentioned, Kathy, earlier about UTSA and the Southwest Crest Ursuline facility there.
Yes.
So what is the history behind the Conservation Society and that Ursuline campus?
Well, we purchased it originally from the Ursuline nuns and to save the buildings.
And this is like
60s.
Okay, it was when it was run down, rat infested.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember.
Yes. And we sold it for, I believe, $1 to get the Southwest Craft School going. So it not only preserved it, but it started a whole new institution, which is now merged with UTSA. And
it's a beautiful facility.
It's beautiful.
The San Antonio Book Festival.
Yes. A lot of marriages there. A couple of funerals I remember over the years. it's just a place for everybody. And, of course, there's Club Giroux there. And it's a nice campus.
Right.
But the book festival, yes.
And so what is your concern moving forward?
To preserve those buildings.
Right. So, I mean, there's we haven't heard anything from UTSA. They have these big ambitions for downtown San Antonio, and that's great. It's bringing jobs, and it's going to help
yes.
San Antonio's economy in many ways. But then also we have to make sure that at what cost, right?
Right. And they've pledged us to keep the buildings historic, so that's good. We just haven't heard any details yet because we haven't had a chance to talk to them. But we have every belief that they will do that.
And Louis Fisher, what more can you tell us more about the Ursuline? We say that word like everyone knows what we're talking about.
Well, it was really the Ursuline nuns came to San Antonio in 1851, and to minister. I think they were medical. The Santa Rosa Hospital, I think, was founded by the Ursuline nuns, and they established a school for girls. And in 1851, I think, it was a time when there were very few schools for boys, even. And they established an academy that became a rather large school. I think it was kindergarten through high school. But when there was a gap between when the Ursulines moved out to Vance Jackson Road and reopened the school out there, where it lasted for a few years, and the time when the Conservation Society came in, a developer bought it. And the Conservation Society bought it back piecemeal. And there's some very dramatic stories about how I think this one building that we saw a picture of here earlier was purchased by the Conservation Society. And I think it's something that bought two-thirds of the building or something, and the rest of it had to be purchased later. And so it was pieced together in a very difficult fashion. One of the latest buildings, a three-story, I believe it could have been the high school building, was destroyed in a fire. That, if there was anything good about it, it's that provided sufficient parking for an institution to move into and take over the school. So it was done not only piecemeal, but in a very orderly fashion, using the finest methods of historic preservation to preserve a very unusual complex in Texas.
It's right on the Riverwalk, right downtown.
It's perfect, yeah.
It'd be hard to imagine that anyone would turn their nose up at that facility, you know, but it's only through the perspective of time and history and all the efforts that have been made to do that. And you have to wonder, like, what else have we missing? I have a question from one of our viewers, Janie. How does the Conservation Society and the city decide something is worth saving or not worth saving? And let me go to Kathy Rhodes for that first.
Well, we, of course, look at the history of it. And we have a great library at our office that people can come and research different things. And we look up all the history, and we certainly talk with OHP because it's probably going to go through a council at some point. So how deep does that history go, and how important it is for this community to save it?
And whose history?
Everybody's history.
So when people think about downtown a lot, and is the Conservation Society saying it's not just downtown? I know that there's been some things in rural areas that we've decided this is a building that's important to.
There's a whole committee called Farm and Ranch Committee, and they go find farmhouses. We had a couple of dairy barns on the north side, old farmhouses that developers, as the city expand, come in and want to raise all that. So we watch that very closely too.
This is a pre-recorded conversation, part of the Texas Public Radio Great Essays series about the Conservation Society. More stories about saving San Antonio history when we come back.
Mexico had a long, complicated relationship with slavery.
Between 1580 and 1640, New Spain, as Mexico was then known, imported more enslaved Africans than any other colony in the Americas except Brazil's.
That changed in the 19th century when Mexico abolished slavery and when slaves from the U.S. fled to Mexico. More about the road south to freedom next time on Fronteras. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio has a lot of history. It goes back even before the Spanish arrived. It continues to be made even today. Preserving it, that's something else. And whose history gets to be saved? This is a pre-recorded conversation about the San Antonio Conservation Society.
And Shannon Shea Miller, preservation officer, and there's a Office of Historic Preservation, and y'all have a process. Describe the process.
Sure. Well, in order for there to be protection for a property, it has to be designated historic, which is a form of, it's an overlay in the zoning. So it's actually tied to the property's zoning. And so in order for that to happen, it ultimately has to be approved by city council. And we have in the Unified Development Code 16 criteria. And in order for a property to be eligible to be a landmark, it has to meet at least three of those criteria. So it's not a super high threshold. And fortunately, we have a very good set of those 16. Several of them touch on, it's not just architecture. A lot of those things touch on cultural history and cultural significance. And so it definitely leaves the window open pretty wide for the type of properties that can be designated. But of course, it is also a political process. And, you know, sometimes there are certainly conflicting priorities, and sometimes designations get approved and sometimes they don't. There have been, unfortunately, some changes to the state law recently that have made designation a little bit more difficult, a little higher threshold for designation, particularly over an owner's objection or if it's owned by a religious property. And so it's made designation a little bit more difficult, but it's still, a process that has seen a lot of success. I mean, just last month, I think we had 5 new landmarks that were approved by City Council. So,
but through the designation process and what y'all look at to decide if something is historic and value and worth preserving, I mean, it does seem like, was it 503 Urban Loop, the Fannie Porter, mm-hmm. Butch Cassidy House, that seems like it would meet that criteria.
It does. I mean, we think that it does. But the issue that came up with that is that it was believed to have been designated when hundreds of properties were designated in the 80s. And after doing some research, there was no evidence that it was included in the ordinance. So it actually, there was nothing to back up the fact that it had been designated. And legally and ethically, we had to be upfront about that and say, you know, it's not currently designated, but our research still stands and we still believe that it meets the criteria. And so eventually the Conservation Society and Esperanza
West Side and Tier 1
submitted a request for review of historic significance, which is another opportunity. Like basically a third party individual or organization or group of organizations can submit an application asking the HDRC to initiate a designation process. City Council can initiate, staff can initiate, or of course the owner of the property itself could initiate.
I'm going to follow up a little bit more, but first I'm going to go to Lewis Fisher and see if you can kind of fill in the blanks on 503 Urban Loop, Fannie Porter House, Butch Cassidy. Was this like the Wild West?
It was totally the Wild West. That whole neighborhood was filled with densely packed and densely populated houses of ill repute, which gave San Antonio a certain cachet among the cowboys on the frontier of the 1870s and 80s. But that house itself was occupied by Madam Fannie Porter, who was one of the most illustrious of ladies in San Antonio at the time.
She was British, cold champagne, clean sheets.
Yeah, probably something like that. But she attracted some of the finer gentlemen like Butch Cassidy and his Wild Bunch gang. In fact, there was a movie, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, in which there's a scene of, I think it was the Sundance Kid doing wheelies on his bicycle in front of a house, which was in front of Fannie Porter's house. The Pinkerton agency finally
That's the famous Raindrops Are Falling on My Head.
Yeah, that's it. Theme. That's it. Yeah, I'll let you sing that. But anyway, the Pinkertons finally broke up the gang and they split. And all
well, apparently that's where they had their going away party was at that house before they left for South America.
Yeah, that's right.
So that sounds like it's worth saving, Vincent.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a good example, because what I keep saying, what I said to the councilman for that district, is this is another example like the Woolworth. We're not saying you can't do what you want to do, which was build, I think, a 7 or 8-story residential high-rise, because it's a big site. You can save that house, part of the structure that it later became an orphanage and daycare center for over 100 years run by the Catholic Church. You can build your high-rise there and keep the building. It's not either or. It's both and.
But right now, what is the designation of that property? We know that it has been purchased by someone who wants to develop it for housing. Could we wake up tomorrow and it be gone?
No, of course not. I mean, it has to go through. So every demolition in the city goes through review by the Office of Historic Preservation. And if it's already designated or if we believe there to be potential significance, then we pull the demolition permit and hold it. Like, it's not issued. And once there's a designation request in process, then there are effectively interim controls in place. And so if they were going to do anything to the building right now, it would require HGRC review. And in addition to even though it's not currently a landmark, it is in the downtown. I mean, it still is under the purview of the HGRC because it's in the downtown area. And so what's pending review at HGRC currently is the request for review of historic significance, which is what would initiate the rezoning or designation process. At some point, we do anticipate that they will come back with an application for whatever development they plan to propose. But I think they're waiting at this point to see what happens with the designation. And I think Vince's point is very important, not only at this property, but any other property that we talk about, is it's really never black and white or all or nothing. I mean, it's really about how can we take what's special about this and incorporate it into the future of the site. And there are later additions to those buildings, for example, later alterations that may or may not have the same level of significance. And so, you know, potentially portions could be saved and other portions could go. But that's the beauty of the HGRC review process, because it allows for public input. It allows for those council-appointed volunteers who serve on the Historic and Design Review Commission to really think through those options and weigh the different possibilities.
You make it sound like it's ludicrous to think that someone in the middle of the night would bulldoze a historic site, but we've seen that happen in San Antonio, right? Louis Fisher was like a Fink cigar company.
I think the classic one is the Fink cigar company, where it was done, I think, on a Sunday morning, and the rationale is you can't argue with the pile of rubble.
So that's the nightmare that you guys have at the Conservation Society.
That, I don't think, happens quite as often as it used to.
No.
I think the penalties, I believe, are a lot higher if something like that should be attempted.
What was significant about the Fink Cigar Company?
Well, I think the building had some architectural significance. I think the Fink Cigar Company was one of the oldest tobacco companies in Texas.
Remember, there was a strike against there, I think.
Emmett Tenayuca
led a strike against them before the pecan shiller.
Right.
So, yeah, it had significance in San Antonio. Here's another question from a viewer. With so many transplants in SA, most fall in love with what's preserved, but many don't care. How society and the Office of Historic Preservation reach out to a broader audience about the importance of preservation? So how do you reach out to a broader audience about historic preservation, Kathy Rose?
You market well, and you let all these new people know about what you're doing and why they need to participate. Talking like Alamo Ranch, which is a huge new area in the city, and somebody said in 5 years it's going to be as big as Corpus Christi. Well, that's a whole new audience that we have to educate and sell them the doctrine, so to speak.
And one of the things we try to do is have our membership meetings and public presentations in different parts of the city to try to get the word out.
I think it's also important to try to reach people where they are, so to speak, like think of different ways to engage. I mean, for example, later this week, as part of the World Heritage Festival, we're hosting Restored by Light, which is an event at Mission San Jose this year that shows what the facades of the mission would have looked like historically using projection technology. And what's great is in years past, you know, literally thousands of people have come out with their kids and they're running around and they're playing and they're just enjoying family time. But at the same time, they're learning about the rich history of San Antonio. We do a lot of like hands-on classes and fairs and silly events like the amazing preservation race for kids, where hopefully the kids come, they learn something about historic preservation, and they teach their parents. And so, you know, I think both organizations try to be really creative about programming so that we can attract different types of people in different communities.
And one of the things that I think Kathy mentioned earlier, the heritage education tours, we used to take 2,000 fourth graders around to a mission in one other historic site like Casa Navarro or Spanish Governor's Palace each year. Well, with COVID, we couldn't do that, but it gave us an opportunity, actually. We've done three and are doing two more virtual tours, which we can now share with every school district. So it's not limited by how many
across
we can fit on our buses.
Yeah. We want to take it to the whole state.
But the projection technology, we can see how actual colorful these missions were painted, not what you see, you know, was just they're beautiful in their, you know, monochromatic fashion, but to see them painted, that's amazing.
Well, it is, and I think it surprises people, you know, to imagine like 300 years ago how like awe-inspiring that would have been to come and see the missions painted in that way. And you know, one of the other things that is going to happen this year that we're really excited about is a partnership with students at SAISD. We worked with art teachers to submit drawings that will be projected on the facade of the mission. And so, of course, the main event, the star of the show, is what the facades look like historically. But then as the evening goes on, there's an opportunity to sort of see other images. And so it'll be very exciting for the students to see their artwork up on the facade of a World Heritage mission.
We're taking a break. This is TPR's The Source. More conversation about the Conservation Society in just a minute. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Let's get back to our pre-recorded conversation about saving San Antonio history and about the Conservation Society.
A comment from Elaine V. Vince and Kathy, please share how everyone is invited to join the Conservation Society of SA.
See, that's one of our wonderful volunteers.
Yes, it is.
Go to www.saconservation.org and join.
Another comment from Maddie. Love hearing the stories. My mom went to school at the old Ursuline. We're so happy the Conservation Society stepped in. So this brings up the human connection, you know, something I really kind of focus in on. The buildings are great. I love the buildings, but people use these buildings. This influences them. The built environment influences us in any number of ways. And Lewis, you write about that quite a bit in your research and in your books. You talk about how the plazas of San Antonio were so important. The Chili Queens, they're long gone, but they're still remembered today. They're part of San Antonio's fabric. They're part of our DNA. Or are we saving the history of the people? Is that happening?
I think it is. I think it is. And Night in Old San Antonio was so popular to everybody. They go down and have a good time.
Thank you.
If they stop to think about the words themselves, the name, Night in Old San Antonio, that does reflect right back to the good times that everybody had in San Antonio in the past, and which are obviously still remembered and cherished and continued.
And it will be April 5 through 8 this coming year.
All right, so let's talk about NIOSA, however you want to deal with it. With COVID, we haven't had a full NIOSA. And will we ever get back to crowding all those people into La Villita? It was such a big part of, you know, the experience, but, you know, it was a big fundraiser for Conservation Society. And to do all of this work, not just to, you know, show up at meetings, but you give grants to help people preserve buildings and do things. What's that future look like?
I hope it looks bright. We've got some construction problems going on right now to have a full NIOSA, but that's going to all be taken care of, I'm sure, because we'll work together to make that happen. And this past year, it was later because of COVID. We followed all the protocols, and we'll continue to do that. And we didn't have quite as many people this year, but that's understandable. We still had a good crowd, pretty good crowd, But those are the funds. Everybody's a volunteer, number one. Please volunteer for next year. And show our heritage and keep it alive.
But it was also a great education opportunity. When you get people to go to an event like this and participate, then they're more likely to join you when it comes time to supporting a major preservation effort.
Correct.
Push.
And it's all different kinds of food, and it's wonderful.
The food's great, and the friends are great. The old high school buddies are there.
Yes, yes.
So here's another question from a viewer, and it's from Ruby. Less than 20 years ago, La Gloria on the west side was demolished. The space held cultural significance to the Mexican-American community. How will blunders like this not happen again? So La Gloria was like a restaurant. It was a dance facility. It was part of San Antonio's west side culture. People hated to see it go, and they just turned it into like a convenience store or something like that. It was a big loss.
Yeah, and you know, part of the challenge has been that if you do look historically, we've been around 97 years, but going back 20 years is really when people started to pay more attention to forgotten parts of the city.
Like a little malt house is another example.
The malt house was another example.
Laramas.
We've successfully saved Laramas, and we were involved with that, but of course Esperanza took the lead. I think there's an understanding today that, you know, we've really got to involve the community. And San Antonio, the other thing I would say about San Antonio compared to other towns is you have grassroots preservation organizations more than you do in some other cities. And they're specifically focused on the west side, which, you know, has lost significant landmarks like La Gloria, like the Malt House, many others. And so we're going to try to make sure it doesn't happen again.
But we have, like, the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center, which is preserving that beautiful theater and some of the buildings around it and also the culture in that area. And do you all work together? How does that work, Kathy?
Yes, we do all work together. And Vince mentioned the Esperanza and Peace and Justice Center. We work with them. And I have a personal interest because they have Cine Festival still, I believe, there. That whole area is going to become more important in the future, I think, with UTSA expansion. We don't know how far they're going to go or what they're going to do.
And if I may add, I think that question underscores the importance of community involvement. And because, you know, sometimes there are, like, La Gloria, that was before my time, but, you know, it sounds like it was a wonderful place, and it's a very sad loss. But, you know, sometimes there's significance that isn't visible to the naked eye. It's more cultural significance, it's historical significance. And the best way to help protect those sites for people that are listening or who are interested is to let us know about them. And, you know, like at OHP, we have an online like crowdsourcing opportunity called the Discovery Map, where you can submit your own stories and photos. And we really encourage people to do that, because sometimes there may be a place that we all just don't even know about yet. And so there is a really important opportunity for people to get involved. We also have a kind of local marker program called There's a Story Here, and another called History Here. And it's a way to really help people think about maybe history with a small H, like their family histories and their, you know, things that have been important culturally to them growing up in San Antonio or relocating here, or you know, their grandparents' stories. Like, those are the kinds of things we also want to make sure that we're capturing, because those then tie back to places that we also want to make sure we're trying to preserve.
Family history, stories that were swapped over in Domino's table or cooking in the kitchen and the special events. And then maybe some people have some relics or some pictures of some newspaper articles that have been panned down, and people say, I want to make sure this gets into the right hands. Is there a repository for preserving this history in San Antonio, scanning it or something? How do we do that?
I mean, I think there's multiple answers to that question. I mean, the Conservation Society does have an excellent library and librarian who's a great resource. We also kind of, you know, work with people on some of those types of things. There's the public library also has a great repository.
It's so, like, Sarah Gould, she's sort of Mexican-American.
Sarah is a great resource for sure. And I think, you know, on some level, it depends on what it is, of course. But, you know, I really want to underscore the option that we're trying to encourage people to take advantage of, that is the, you know, kind of there's a story here program or history here, because that's how we can tell the stories that maybe are the underrepresented stories. Sarah Gould, you mentioned, uses one of her examples is she actually worked on an application to get a marker, like a state level marker, related to the floods, and it wasn't approved. And it's like, you know, for whatever reason, we don't need to get into that, but it's like we really wanted there to be an option for San Antonians. And so that's why we developed this, the History Here marker program, and that There's a Story Here program, so that we can capture those stories and it doesn't have to be kind of intimidating, or that we can sort of try to eliminate some of the barriers.
Right. So, and really quickly now, because we're running out of time, the question of gentrification, we're having some of our legacy neighborhoods, there's some economic success, and that is going to be turbulent in some areas. And what kind of role does the Conservation Society play in that?
Well, certainly through the neighborhood associations, we get alerted. The bottom line is people have to get involved. And if it's in your neighborhood, you need to pay attention. You can't just get up and go to work every day and think that everything's going to be okay.
It takes a little corner store, been there for 100 years or more, and now it's going to get knocked down.
They would notify their neighborhood association and the Conservation Society and the Office of Historic Preservation.
And we have created, OHP created through these Living Heritage Symposiums, which the Society was involved in supporting, a legacy business program that's really looking at how do you preserve things that maybe aren't a building but an institution in the community. So we have new techniques. I mentioned San Francisco. They're the ones that started legacy business, and I think we're the only other city that has it right now. So there are new tools that have been developed, you know, here and through
Kathy Rhodes. So what do you see for the immediate future and long-term future for San Antonio Conservation Society?
Well, I think maintaining our buildings and getting more people involved, community involvement. As you mentioned, our image, I want to preserve our image as the most historic place in Texas and the country. It's brought economic development. It's brought people. But we have to marry the new technology that we have with saving the old. Like Shannon mentioned, the art on the mission. I mean, that's a great example of combining the old with the new technology and getting the kids interested in it, because they're used to looking at screens and that sort of thing. So that marries that. But there's always a challenge. Some of them we don't know yet, which is kind of the fun of it a little bit, to imagine what's going to pop up next.
So we have advocates like Everett Fry,
yes,
who's talking about preserving the African-American history,
yes,
of San Antonio. And that's got to be a priority. We have to push that to, you know, one of the top things and say,
sure,
you know, for so long, this community did not have a seat at the table, and now we have to make sure that they're always there.
We just discussed a cemetery on the north side in Council District 10 with the councilman, and nobody seems to know who owns it or anything about it, so we're looking into that. There are names on graves like Friesenhahn, so it was obviously a German community. So there's something new all the time to challenge us and to dig deeper into our roots.
I want to thank all of our panelists this evening. We had Kathy Rhodes, president of the San Antonio Conservation Society, Vincent Michael, the executive director of the San Antonio Conservation Society, Shannon Shea Miller is the City of San Antonio's historic preservation officer, and Louis Fisher, he is a San Antonio author, historian, publisher, a San Antonio treasure, a reservoir of deep knowledge. I'm David Martin Davies. This has been Great Essay, a series of conversations about what makes San Antonio's culture so fantastic. And this has been made possible due to support from Culligan Water of San Antonio and Frost. Thanks for watching.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chan. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.